When something happens to your car, you might say,
"No!" My car!
But what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey everybody, this is Spike Ferguson from Spike's Car Radio. We're out here in the porch of at the Malibu Kitchen at the Malibu Country Mart every weekend doing podcasts. My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. We're going to have Jeremy Piven. We're going to have Chris Hardwick. See you soon on Spike's Car Radio.
I think he's over-projecting for a podcast.
And I love to over-project for podcasts. Join me every week at PodcastOne.com and Apple Podcasts.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. Make it on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. This is Ace on the, huh?
No. Nope.
The hell show are we doing here? Yeah. This is CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt the Motorator, DeAndrea over there.
How you doing?
My head's got a lot of stuff in it, man.
Yeah.
Run around all day trying to figure stuff out. And
meanwhile, you have tile on the brain.
Got tile on
house
the brain.
Tile
man.
On the brain.
I'm working on everything.
Working on the house.
Simultaneously. All right. J.R. Granatelli is going to come in. He's the owner and president of Granatelli Motorsports. You might know that name as Uncle Sandy Granatelli.
We had a lot of conversations about Andy and when Parnelli Jones was in here and the turbine cars. And
I was talking about Andy on, we were discussing who fills out a raincoat better.
He looks like a fat Inspector Gadget.
Yeah. It was Andy Granatelli and those old Tune-Up Master commercials would fill out that raincoat.
Yeah,
man, that was awesome.
I love that he had the raincoat. Like, that was the wardrobe decision.
It's weird because it's not like... You think tuning up cars, you think inclement weather conditions. Like, when you think about setting a car's dwell, you think rain.
You think rain.
Like, I don't know what the connection was, but I liked it. And also, I'm
I hope there's a story behind it.
I'm old enough to remember when tune-up masters, I think what they would do, and it's a lot in a weird way, and I don't know what happened to tune-up masters, but it's like saying I had the biggest typewriter repair franchise ever. You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, but now we don't use a typewriter. Like, there is no, you don't bring a car in and get tuned up
right
anymore. A car doesn't need to be tuned up. Everything's electric. There's no points. There's condensers and rotors and, you know, they do all that stuff. But
they just hook up a computer now and figure out if it needs something.
Show me the Tune-Up Masters sticker that they would put on every CarMax pad. Tune-Up Masters was so big at a certain point that I swear to God, every third car I saw driving in Los Angeles had the blue and white Tune-Up Masters.
What era? What years are we talking about?
We're talking about the 70s into the 80s, and they had a Tune-Up Master sticker that I think they would stick on to the back window of a car.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'd ask permission. I think they would do it.
But they put it on the window, not the paint.
Yeah, they put it on the window. The craziest thing about the blue and white, as I recall, I haven't seen one in a million years, obviously.
Might have been before the internet, too, because I'm having trouble finding this photo.
Oh, you're going to find pictures of that sticker
not
somewhere.
Not a lot of nostalgic people taking photos of their Tune-Up Masters stickers.
They were
putting them on the internet.
They were ubiquitous. They were everywhere. And everyone had to go get the car tuned up all the time. In a weird way, you're missing a simple pleasure. We've removed all of this from life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there used to be a very satisfying and simple pleasure to going, I'm going to go down to the auto parts store and I'm going to get 4, 6, or 8 spark plugs.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get a new cap. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get a new rotor, not the brake rotors. And then I may even put a new set of spark plug wires on it.
Yeah.
And this move, you get the catalog, you go down the thing, what rotor do I need? What's the rotor? What's the cap? What's the cap? Get the cap, get the rotor. And then you spend the weekend pulling the plugs out. You look at the plug you pulled out. You go, that's a good thing. Put the new plugs in. Put the new plugs in, put the rotor, get the cap. And when you turn that key and fire it up the first time, even if it's absolutely no different than it was before.
No different before.
It's still a sense of,
it's much
yeah.
better now.
Yeah. And when you drop that car off at Tune-Up Masters, and it did go, what'd you do? We did the cap. We did the rotors. We had to do your coil wire. Need a new, I'm trying to think of the, what is that weird clay thing that would be on the coil? JR was going to tell us when he comes in.
I don't like a resistor.
Yeah, ballast resistor. We had one of the ballast resistors was bad.
Oh yeah,
replace a ballast resistor, new coil, new cap.
Yeah,
new ballast resistor, new rotor, and you just go yeah. You fire it up and it feel like something. That is the Tune-Up Masters.
I had no idea. That to me looks
it's
like
a pledge sticker.
Right.
It's like a
now, how did I know you were going to find that, Max Pata?
I did see it, but I didn't know that's what it was until JR walked in here and told me.
I would have
passed
over it.
There's only one on the internet.
Yeah.
Well, the whole internet.
Now, here's a clue. I said blue and white. Did I not?
Yeah. You did.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so if it's blue and it's white and it's got a T and an M in it, there's a chance.
I thought it was barely a T and an M.
I would have thought it was. On. It looks like the Transformers logo. I would have thought.
Oh, listen, he's one of the. Andy Granatelli looks like one of the earliest members of the Wu-Tang Clan with that sign, man. Well, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. But the blue and the white. That should have made something go off in that miniature brain of yours.
Thanks.
that aches to rock and roll, man.
Yeah.
Lynette was like, wow. Man, she saw Max Apata's band playing
Loxy.
At the bar crawl, Maxie. And she said, she's like, that guy.
You better get that domain name.
He's a whole different dude on stage. And that to me meant super undynamic offstage, where I see you 99.97% of the time. So even though it was supposed to be a compliment, all I heard was super undynamic whenever I see him.
Thanks, Lynette.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, did she say different or just better? Just like on stage, he's better.
It was implied that it was a better.
It was better.
It was better, and it was a whole different you that I'll never see or benefit from, obviously, but a whole. Because that's what you're looking for in your employees. You want them to spring to life when they're not at work.
Yeah.
Any boss will tell you that. What are you looking for most?
Is where he really brings it outside,
you want one that really,
outside the office.
You want one that really jumps to life. When they're not on the clock. Now, comatose at work. Out of work, the life of the party. Now, she was like, oh, man, that guy rocks. I said, I know he does. He said, no, he really.
Said who?
I said, look, I think he's been playing a lot, too, man. You got to get reps. The reps make a huge difference with people, right, Max Pata?
They really have. Like, I saw a video of us early on, like, before we started playing all these shows, and it's a lot more terrible.
Yeah, that's what she said. He was far less terrible. That's how she described it.
Every time you play your set, people should watch, like, a YouTube video from years ago. That way you can see how great you guys are now.
She pronounced you were 65% less terrible.
I'll take it.
Yeah. All right. Let's not be terrible. Let's go with Car Shield, man. Sooner or later, car's going to break down. If you're lucky, it happens while it's under warranty. But a new engine, new transmission, cost over $5,000. No kidding. Especially when you put a hole in the side of your Roadster engine. Yeah. I mean, simple sensors can cost a grand these days. Look, we figured out you don't need to go to Tune-Up Masters anymore, but there's a bunch of computers. And when one of those sensors or something goes wrong, you are in trouble.
It always starts there.
Get extended coverage. Do what I did. Go to carshield.com. Makes it easy. Select your favorite mechanic or go to the dealership and let them do the work. No checks or waiting for reimbursement. CarShield gets you the mechanic and it gets the mechanic. You get the mechanic. CarShield gets them paid directly. Plus, 24/7 roadside assistance and rental while you're in the shop. So You need a little something called peace of mind. Let's go with Car Shield. Save thousands of potential dollars on repairs, man. And it is a lot these days. Get the ultimate in extended vehicle service protection. Visit carshield.com/carcast. Save 10%. That is carshield.com/carcast. Save 10%. Let's protect ourselves, everybody. It is Car Shield. All right. Let's see. Do we have a question before we bring in Jer?
Still waiting on calls.
All right. Matt, you went to the auction.
I did. I went to Auctions America, which is part of RM Sotheby's, but they do kind of their smaller auctions. It was at Santa Monica Airport. It was at Barker Hangar. We've been there before. And it was cool. Like, a lot of the cars there were a little bit more of, like, the modern supercars, Ferrari 348s, 360s. We saw 575 Maranello, which was a gorgeous blue Note with red leather.
I've got to tell you people this. We're calling it blue Note, which is midnight blue or night blue, but not sure if Ferrari calls it blue Note.
Yeah, it was in the description as that.
It said it on the card.
Yeah, well, it was in quotes though. So
yeah, like. I get the feeling they have a different. But I will tell you guys this. And I've even looked at them myself because I've always dug them. I've never squeezed the trigger on one. The 355 Ferraris were knocking on the door of $100,000 2 years ago. They seem to be 55 to 65 all day long in nice ones. And what I would do, that car in the blue Note, like the midnight blue or even a lighter blue, they have a couple, maybe two shades of blue on that car with a... like burgundy interior even a cream interior. Boy, if you could find like single owner
and if you
low
found
mileage,
one with a manual with the gated shifter instead of the
gated
F1
shifter,
transmission
and you get found a really nice example of that for $57,000, I'd get it.
I tell you, the takeaway was there was a lot of nice cars there, and Auctions America did well. They did $9 million, but overall I would say the market on these cars are down. I think race cars are doing well. I think the collector car market is down a little bit. There's obviously a few exceptions there. But right now is probably the time to buy. And if you're trying to get into a pretty cool collector car that I think is going to make some money and maybe you can drive, and I don't want to call it entry level, like what you're talking about, like a 355 or a 348 or something, but in that 50 to 75 range, I think you could probably pick up a nice 348 or a 355.
Yeah.
Drive it for three or four years.
I don't like the 348 enough, but.
Yeah.
Look, here's the deal, everybody. A lot of people don't have $50,000 to spend on a car. I get it. But the problem is if you spend $11,000 on a collector car in 5 years, maybe it'll be worth $17,500 or $18,000, which is fine, but you've made $6,000. I'd rather find that $50,000 somewhere.
Yeah.
Borrow it, whatever. Get the $50,000, get that Ferrari. When the Ferrari in 5 years passes 100, well, each car has maybe doubled in value in 5 years. In one scenario, you made $11,000. In our scenario, you made $50,000. So
you'll get to enjoy the car a bit. And, you'll have to throw a little money into it because it's a Ferrari. But, do your research. Get something right. Get something that's got as most of the maintenance stuff done on it as possible already. And, I think also, by the way, you're like, hey, I got a Ferrari I can drive to Cars and Coffee on the weekends and stuff. Instead of your Camry or whatever.
Yeah, just wait around and don't look for the...
The market is good right now. I think it's good to buy right now.
I think so, too. You want to get JR in here, Max Pata?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but as he's coming in, I want to tell you about Alone. This TV show sounds nuts, by the way.
That's good.
Alone's back for the fourth season with a crazy new twist. The rules have changed. There's 10 survivalists that are still dropped into the unforgiving wilderness, but now it's 5 competing teams, brothers and fathers and sons and a married couple. Different kind of survival show. Besides their teammates, they're truly alone. There's no camera crews. They film everything themselves. There's no gimmicks. There's no forced challenges. The teams are split. They're equipped with 5 items each. I don't really know what those items are, but
I'm guessing it's not like a jetpack and a time machine,
or like a cell phone and a brick oven for your pizza.
Yeah.
To win, they must each they find each other and survive on North Vancouver Island the longest. That's the whole thing. But the winner takes $500,000.
$500,000, man.
That's not a bad payday.
Oh, you could buy 10 355s now.
You could tune in all new episodes Thursdays at 10 at 9 Central on History Channel.
J.R. Granatelli's in studio. Granatelli Motorsports is his business. They do aftermarket performance parts and accessories and designs and engineering, distributes, installs. Good to see you again, J.R.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What a family of racers. Of course, we all know Tune-Up Masters and Andy Granatelli. Was Tune-Up Masters everywhere, or was it a SoCal thing?
California, Arizona, Nevada. Started out California, then we just kept going. It wasn't really a franchise. We owned them all. It was all family owned.
At the height of its powers, how many of those?
630 locations.
That's a lot.
Wow. Yeah,
it sold to a company called Cardiz, which was ultimately Checker Cragen, mm-hmm. which then turned into Checker Shooks Cragen, CSK.
Yeah.
But ultimately, yeah, it sold for $350 million.
So it was it ended up turning into an auto parts.
Well,
stores.
I think what happened was is we saw the writing on the wall. You know, right. As electronics got more popular, you didn't need tune-ups anymore.
Right.
And so my father and my Uncle Andy were pretty much visionaries. They come up with something, you know,
right.
Take it to the max and get rid of it. So
sure.
Checker Cragen bought it thinking that they could sell car parts
in those stores.
In the location.
It's like Valvoline bought like Easy Lube or something like
yeah,
that,
yeah.
You know, because like, yeah, we're just gonna move our oil.
All these places had, you know, they weren't set up like a store.
Right.
You know, if you have just a basic strip mall in the storefront, you could make it a liquor store or a laundromat or whatever, but this is a little bit different. But God bless him for getting out.
It was great timing
because
it was like, hey, I make pagers, and I feel like pagers are coming to the end, you know?
Well, I'll tell you the closing. The closing was is that we had a $35 million deal with Bosch, and Champion Spark Plugs wanted the business. And so that's how CSK came into it. We're like, hey, you know, if you want, you have to buy us if you want us to use your plugs. We're like, great, we'll do it. And
was it, you know, you hear about these companies sometimes where they go, you talk about McDonald's, you go, I may butcher this a little bit, they go, oh, McDonald's. And they go, McDonald's really about owning real estate versus selling burgers. Did your uncle and Uncle Andy own all this real estate and became more about how valuable the real estate was?
It's exactly hit the nail on the head. Everybody thinks we made our money in car racing. We made the money in the real estate.
You know, car racing is where you spend money.
Because imagine how inexpensive some of this real estate in Arizona was in 1978, you know, or even SoCal. I mean, the crazy places like, hey, had one in Encino, you know what I mean, on Ventura Boulevard. You know what that lot is worth now?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's insane. Did you grow up out here?
I grew up in Encino.
You little rich kid. Yeah. I'm from North Hollywood. South of the Boulevard?
Maybe
of course.
Just
damn
lots.
You. It was the Ventura Boulevard was like the train tracks.
Yeah.
You know, being this kid grew up on the wrong side of the tracks. I was on the wrong side.
Oh, you were on the M&M side.
Yeah,
you're
I grew up on
the 8 Mile side.
8 Mile
or whatever.
Side.
Yeah, absolutely. We were south side of the Boulevard.
Aaron wouldn't be like this dude. Where's he living? South of the Boulevard.
That's right. Right.
And we didn't have to say what boulevard, Vent. If you live south, you got into the hills.
It's still kind of that way.
Yeah, but the problem is anything close or north is now through the roof, too. But still.
But it still has to be close.
If it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger.
You've got to be able to hear the boulevard.
Look at me. Look at me. Yes, I'm very bitter, but I'm strong.
That's right.
So you grew up, what high school and stuff did you
Taft.
Go to? Taft. That's a good high school.
Reseda was the high school for Encino. It was a bad time with the busing whole thing, right? So Taft.
Yeah.
Buses don't cross the boulevard?
No.
Taft was good. Taft was on Ventura Boulevard, right?
Yeah.
And, all right. So, now, you grew up in this business, Uncle Andy, and we're talking about the turbine car, at least off the air, maybe on the air. We talked to Parnelli Jones about the turbine car.
Yeah.
Turbine is like, it's really cool, except for it doesn't really work, but it's still really a cool It's the greatest, like, boy, I wish this worked idea. It's basically what socialism is, I've always said. Like, it's like, that would be great, except for it never works.
It never works.
But it still would be great. But you did a turbine vet?
Yeah. So the
I never knew about that car.
Well, the turbine is like 10 shows in its own, obviously. I'm sure right. When you talk to Parnelli about it, he can go on and on as well. But essentially, yeah, the turbine came out in 67. That's the one that Parnelli drove. Then in 68.
At Indy.
Indy. And then in 68, Colin Chapman, who owned Lotus, we put the engine behind the driver in more. And we call it the wedge.
Right.
Those cars were hugely successful. They won tons of races. But again, they didn't win Indy. That's all anybody cares about.
Those were the
Indy.
STP.
Those were all STP cars. Mm-hmm. So now I got my driver's license in 82. And of course, growing up, I used to always take the wedge out. In Santa Monica, my dad would let me drive it up and down the street. So I was like, we need to get this engine into
a car. You
can
do that on the south side of the boulevard.
No, this is Santa Monica.
Santa Monica. So literally a late 60s era Indy car with a turbine engine in it and no lights.
No.
But no bumpers, no anything.
Nope.
Just a turbine car. And he would let you – he
up
had it
down
at his shop.
Santa Monica Boulevard.
Where was the shop?
929 Olympic.
So he had a shop on the west side in Olympic, mm-hmm. and he let you drive it out on the street.
My dad had been there since like the actually all three brothers had been there since like the 40s. So by the time I showed up in the 80s, they had all the police. Everybody was buddies. Everybody knew everybody. We could do no wrong. I was like royalty in Santa Monica.
Oh, I hate you so much. God, do I hate you. What a contrast. Get my dad in here so I can beat him with a stick. So... the turbine, this is, for people, people say to me all the time, they go, oh, you got those Newman race cars, huh? And I go, yeah. Hey, can you drive those things on the street? I can't drive them on the street.
No.
A fire comes out of the exhaust pipe. Yeah. They're an inch off the ground. They're louder and shit. But driving an Indy car on the street is obviously nuts, unless you're in that Stallone movie.
That's right. Driven,
where he did. Okay.
Yeah.
Pulled the manhole cover. Did you pull manhole cover straight off? You're going so fast?
No.
Okay. But you could fire up the turbine car, and they had it at their shop.
Yeah, they had them right there. It was like four or five of them.
So they kept all that stuff.
Everything.
They kept everything, and they said, go ahead and fire it up, and you get in that thing and go up and down Santa Monica Boulevard.
No problem.
Wow.
Actually, Olympic Boulevard. But
What was the acceleration like? Because I'm guessing it was slow on that
car.
Okay,
here's, let me explain this to you. It's interesting that you would say that. A turbine car makes like 600 horsepower, which is okay.
Right.
But by today's standard, that's normal, right? But they make 1,000 foot-pounds of torque, what's called its stall. So if you hold the brake and you step on the gas, the thing has 1,000 foot-pounds of torque right now.
So it's got to spool up a little bit.
A little bit.
Well, you put your foot on the brake for a reason, right?
If you step on the gas and you never hit the brake, the car, it feels like the ultimate turbo lag. It's got about 20 feet of nothing, and then all of a sudden, it's like you got rear-ended. But if you just hold the brake a little bit, and then
instantaneously
the things. That's why the cars were all-wheel drive.
Oh, because it would light up the rear.
It was just so much.
All turbine cars were all-wheel drive.
This is very interesting because my take on the turbine, or my notion, was always just that. Part of it is from Chrysler and Jay Leno's turbine car. Just like my feeling was that it would have horsepower but not torque. But you're saying it had 1,000. It was the other way around. So I would think it would all be at the top of the RPM where it was creating all the horsepower, but it wouldn't have the low end. But it would. And you say all-wheel drive because it had to be. Because that was another thing that was confusing me, which is all-wheel drive is heavy.
But Parnelli talked about it when he was here. He was talking about all-wheel drive.
And it's, I knew it, but it's like it seemed heavy, and it seemed like one more thing to break. And it seemed like, why?
That's what broke. The bearing in the engine didn't break. When Parnelli lost the race, he didn't lose it because the turbine failed. He lost it because a $7 ball bearing in the transfer case failed. So he would give it the throttle, but the transmission wasn't turning.
Right, because, it's like, I said to Bruce Kennepa once about the 935s. I said, this is the cutting edge of technology from Germany in a race car. Four speed? Why a four speed? And he said, why not? And I said, four speed. What about a five speed? And he said, don't need it.
Don't need it.
Got plenty of speed and more weight and one more thing to break. And I was like, okay. Now I understand why the cutting edge technology is going with 4-speed instead of 5-speed. And so that's what broke the transfer case.
Yeah, $7 ball bearing in the transfer case took it out.
$7 back then, but now
it'd be like $13.
By like $13.
Right. So. Wow. And there was no way to do a 2-wheel drive because when you came out of a current turn or whatever, when you got on it, the rear end would come around because it would light the tires up.
Too much torque. You go into the corner and you stand on the throttle. As you know, as a race car driver, you go in slow, come out fast. You come into the corner, and then you step on the gas, the thing would spin out. And all the testing was done at Riverside. So Riverside, Andretti was driving the car originally doing the testing. And he's like, this car is ill-handling. So therefore, it became all-wheel drive.
Is it the only Indy car in the semi-modern era to have an all-wheel drive? I can't think of any other ones.
In the early 60s, it was a diesel-powered all-wheel drive, but it was talk about a tank. Holy moly, it was heavy and didn't do very well.
Right.
So that's down on horsepower and torque.
So,
well, that would be, I don't know.
It was the all-wheel drive that ended up being the death knell of the car.
Every year. Well, don't forget, 67 is a famous car, right? 68, we had 3 wedges. So on the pole, 2, 3. We had the whole front row. Parade lap, car 1, car 3, zigzagging to heat up the tires. Boom, they take each other out. So on the parade lap, we lose 2 more turbines. Joe Leonard was the guy in the second position, and then he had the exact same problem in the end. And we found out after the fact that Andy, the constant promoter, said these cars will run on any kind of fuel. We don't care what it is. So instead of running kerosene, we made a deal with another fuel company. It didn't have enough lubricity in it, and that's why the bearings would seize. It was all because we
so
had
that,
the
that was an engine seize, not a transfer.
The transfer case. Well, no, it was the fluid that was the oil that didn't have enough lubricity, and it actually seized the bearing in the transfer case.
Right.
And in 68, you're right.
But you said it'll run on.
It'll run on anything.
But I'm just trying to get clarity here. So the fuel, it's a turbine. It'll run on anything. But if there's not enough lubricity, I love that name, man. Yeah. That's cementuous. And scrutineering are my new words.
Yeah.
I would like to scrutineer lubricity competition. Oh. See, you just had the most lube in the oil, in the gas. So is it like a 2-stroke in the sense that he made, so Andy, the constant promoter, said, we won't run kerosene, which is, when they say diesel, when they say jet fuel, they're just saying high-grade kerosene, right, or high-grade diesel. So that's why it smells like diesel when you ever go out on a tar. You never flown privately, but and when I fly privately.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he flew with me. All right, the point is this. He put something else in there. And the lubrication was not good enough. But then how did that do the transfer?
So, see, you're the smartest person. You've caught me on that one. So in 68, we seized the bearing in the transfer case. Excuse me. 67, we seized the bearing in the transfer. In 68, we went to the better fuel. And then you're right. We seized the bearing in the turbine itself.
Oh, so the other way around. You went to the better fuel.
And it killed the motor.
Oh, the better fuel killed the motor?
Because it didn't have lubricity.
The better fuel. Right. But not the better fuel. Yeah, right. Yeah, man. So, those turbine cars were snake-bitten because they really should have walked away with 1, possibly 2 Indy 500 championships. And by the way, the warm your tires up and bang into the other guy, is my greatest fear in life. some people, it's public speaking.
Yeah.
For me, it's that warm-up. I'm too scared to even – I barely do it because it's like it's whacking another guy or just spinning out on your cold tires, which is easily done.
In the you're right. And in the vintage racing, you always feel like the guy next to you warming up the tires is driving something 10 times more expensive, right?
Yeah.
And it's like you don't want to be the guy that knocks the real Cobra off the track.
I'm the guy who did the Can-Am race and spun the car out trying to warm up the tires. And I wasn't even doing the zigzag move when the vet went off the track.
Oh, the Trans Am race.
All I did was...
Yeah, you said Can-Am.
Oh, sorry, Trans-Am.
I was like, what did you do that?
Yeah. You know, you don't know everything about me.
Yeah, I kind of do.
I was in the Chaparral. The vacuum car.
Yeah. Wait, so yeah. I want to ask about the Corvette turbine car, but this is like street car.
All right, so now what happens is going working at STP, you know, hanging out with my dad and everything, there was a spare engine. We were always restoring the cars, right? And so as I got older, like 10, right, my dad's got me working. Because back in the old days, leaving on the north side, you had to work, right?
Yeah, at a McDonald's.
Right. So
not at a turbine car.
Well, it's relative.
All right.
So I was working on the car, and basically we restored a car. There was a spare engine. And I'm like, Dad, I want to put this engine in my Camaro. A gentleman came by, heard us what we were talking about, and he wanted us to put a turbocharged engine in his Corvette. And my dad was against turbocharging it because, of course, we owned Paxton at the time.
And supercharge,
so, right.
Right.
Yeah. So that was like the turbos were the anti, right?
Yeah.
And for those asking, a turbocharger and a supercharger, we had like a belt-driven turbo.
Yeah.
Right.
So
yeah.
That was really the difference. Anyway, bottom line is the guy had tons of money, and so I convinced my dad to let me put the turbine engine in the Corvette, and that's how it became.
For a customer.
For a customer. His name was Herb Orlowitz.
Yeah.
Wow.
See, there's the car. Now, you and I talked
that's
about this, you know, at like a SEMA event.
So that's like a 76 Vet or 70?
It's a 78. It's actually the pace car edition.
Right.
Now, those wheels that are on there.
They're centerline-esque.
Those are ugly, okay? Those are not the wheels that were on the car
when I
built it. What you're looking at here is this is a picture from... Fontana.
Yes.
It was taken about 2 years ago when the latest gentleman came back to me and said, I want you to restore the Lotus Wedge. So I restored the Wedge, which was a 68 car, and this car for him. And he tried to sell them both at Barrett Jackson for $7 million, and it got up to $6.8 million, and he turned it down.
Whoa!
Wow.
He held his ground.
Wow. The... All right, hold on.
And so what you're looking at, go back.
You had center lines on there.
Yeah.
That's center lines?
Yeah, Ray Lipper was my buddy. He owned center lines, so that was like the cool wheel to have in 1980.
I had a buddy named Ray, and he lived in an apartment in Van Nuys with his three brothers.
So that's the way I delivered the car. What you're looking at there is
a moped.
What you're looking at there is the way I delivered the car.
Yeah.
All right. So we're looking at all-wheel
drive.
Got a little Corvette summer in there.
Not all-wheel drive.
Not all-wheel drive.
And the center line were just the aluminum wheels that were flat. They didn't have spokes in them, if you can picture that. All right. Hold on a second, because I have questions now. I have questions about the car at auction. I have questions about why the Chrysler turbine version didn't work.
Okay.
With all the torque, hold on. First, I'll tell you about AMS Oil. Hey, move beyond performance. AMS Oil synthetic motor oil combines top-tier synthetic technology with unique additives to protect up to 25,000. If only they had some of that in the fuel in 1968. That could have saved the... Yeah. 25,000 miles or 1 year in between oil changing. It shields engine from wear and deposits. Wear on pistons and cams lead to loss of power. You don't want that. 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by the industry standard. Piston cleanliness next to godliness. 93% above the industry standard. Let's go with the best. We love lubrication over here, don't we, man?
Lubricity.
We love lubricity. Tested in the field and on the track in extreme conditions. You're a serious gearhead. Let's go with AMSOIL.com/carcast. That's AMSOIL.com/carcast. More info. Get all of it there. They're devoted to protection. All right, so why didn't the Chrysler car work?
Two reasons. Number one, turbine engines have no compression braking. A lot of people don't realize, but when you take a foot off the gas, the car wants to slow down. A turbine car doesn't slow down. It just keeps going.
Right.
And then number two, because it had no compression braking, it was super hard on the brakes.
Sure, yeah.
But the real killer was turbine engines put out so much heat that if you – specifically the Chrysler that you're referring to, when you would pull up behind it, it would melt the car behind it.
Yeah.
So it had much heat.
Yeah.
And I think that was the killer. The brakes they could have figured out. Of course,
the heat, what to do with the heat, if you're driving one of those GTOs with a plastic front nose,
it would. Well,
they didn't invent them yet.
It would look like the dude in
The Nazi?
Yeah.
In Raiders of the
Raiders
Lost Ark?
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me give you a funny, quick funny story.
Right, please.
So on the Corvette, on the turbine Corvette that I built, yeah. when I would pull it out of the driveway every day, one day I came home and I was like, why are all the bushes dead from like 3 feet down, but above they were high? And what happened was every day I'd pull out of the garage and I literally blasted, the heat would kill the bushes below.
Sure. I did the exact same thing. Except for with urine. And it was a smaller spot. But if you just take a leak in the same spot in the backyard every day, you will carve out your own
deadness.
Well,
the trick is to go in the same spot all the time.
Yeah,
that way, you know,
you and I, we have very similar lives. We have dead shrubbery. We know a guy named Ray. We have basically the same life.
Basically the same thing.
Oh, we're looking at pictures of this thing. It is unbelievable. So what do you reckon in the... We like to talk about car collecting and value and stuff like that.
I can't
that.
Believe you got that thing to fit in there.
The guy brought it to Barrett Jackson when?
Twice,
but it was last year.
Last year. He wanted seven for the pair.
For both.
For the pair. What do you reckon each car, how he broke it down, was worth?
So the Wedge, the 68 Wedge, it was car number 60. They valued the Wedge at about $6 million.
Right, so...
And then this one...
He wanted a million for the
other
car.
He wanted a million for this one, and he couldn't get it.
But it's still got to feel pretty good that, you know, what is essentially, you know, Chip Foose doesn't get $1 million for one of his cars and stuff. This is one that a Granatelli breathed on, and thus... Because there's, you know, obviously a 76, 78 vet, sorry. A 78 vet is worth... $7,000
on a good day.
On a good day. So the idea that, you know, it is the turbine vet is kind of cool. That you, how old were you when you did that?
I was 18.
That's pretty amazing. I don't know that many guys that could tell that. I mean, my buddy Ray.
Yeah, but I mean, Noah, there's your Ray, there's his Ray.
So the jet vet. So
it's amazing you got it all packaged into the vet. Like, not the most ideal car for that kind of. You know, like something with a little more room, maybe.
Well, that's the reason why I didn't go in the Camaro. The Camaro was actually stubbier. The Corvette actually had that long nose. And as Adam makes reference to the Corvette Summer, if you actually look at the car, we actually did stretch the nose 2 inches to get it in there.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, it does look very stretched out. It looks like even more than 2 inches. But the other part of this that's interesting is that means that Indy car is valued at about $6 million.
Parnelli's car was valued at $26
million. 26.
Mm-hmm. Who owns it?
It's a debatable. I think I own it.
Hold on. Count me in, too. You want in? Chris, you want to be in on this?
Yeah. Smithsonian Institute thinks that they own it, and then Indianapolis 500 Museum thinks they own it.
Now me and Matt.
We own it.
We own it too. No, so no, let's just whack it up five ways and be on. So just give me $6 million and I'll start walking.
The settlement is nobody's going to sell it. So they had to put a value on it for insurance purposes. And when they put the owner, I inherited the car. So theoretically, it's really, I believe, I shouldn't say this on air, but I think the Smithsonian owns it.
I'm willing to sell my share right away.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll cash out for, I don't know, 3.9? I don't know what the math is. Let's call it 4. I'll just hit the road. Again, our childhoods are getting closer and closer. Yeah. My dad had a Buick Regal that was stolen in 1987.
Yeah, is it in the Smithsonian?
No, never made it in.
Never made it in. It's there. It's in the parking lot.
Hey, but your dad's 87 Buick Regal was probably purchased for about 14, and today it's worth about 27. So think about that.
Yeah, he doesn't have it anymore.
Too bad.
Driving a Honda CRV. So, cloth interior. All right. So that's great. I love, because I was a little bit confused because I feel like I saw some, we saw the Dan Gurney Eagle late 60s indie stuff come up for auction, and it wasn't that expensive. And so I was surprised that there was that big a chasm between the Gurney stuff and the Granatelli stuff.
It's promotion. You know, I think, Andy, you hit the nail on the head, the trench coat thing. The Granatelli name, in 1971, the Granatelli name was the sixth most recognized name in the world. It outranked Coca-Cola. Now, I don't know why, but it just shows you what Andy really represented from a marketing perspective. The other thing you had made reference to earlier was the pledge sticker, the Tune-Up Masters pledge sticker. Andy was the ultimate promoter. When we were all kids, we all wanted an STP sticker from the gas station, right?
Everybody.
So now when Andy, you know, I don't know if anybody knows this, Andy got fired from STP. That was not a happy demise. So when he left STP, he was bound and determined to put STP effectively out of business, or show everybody at least that Andy made STP, STP didn't make Andy.
Right.
So Tune Up Masters was the next hurrah, and the pledge sticker was the to show he could get more Tune Up Master stickers out there than STP stickers.
Well, it's like his I'm with her sticker, but it's here with Andy.
I'm with Andy. I said I grew up out here north of the boulevard, but I saw that sticker on every other car on the freeway.
You must have been to Tune Up Masters. Like,
I'm trying to think. I'm sure.
When Papa Carolla was let's go get the tune-up.
Well, he didn't.
It'll be a moment of ours.
My parents didn't do stuff. Like, I don't know. The cars needed to be tuned up, but I don't think they ever took them anywhere. They never did any. They wouldn't do anything. They didn't have any money. There was this name popped into my head. Max Pata, you're going to have to listen. There was a place that I'm sure JR is going to have a thought about. There's a place in, like, Eagle Rock called Girardi John, and they did like a dyno tune back in the day. Like, they would do, they take your Z car and they'd give it a high performance tune, which is, I'm not sure what it was, advance it a little bit, put some better plugs in it, whatever, hotter coil or something. They do like a little thing, but it was called Girardi John.
The timing a little,
it was. Yeah.
They didn't actually have a dyno, right? Do they?
I don't know if they. I don't think they would put it on a dyno. Does that name sound familiar?
Yeah, I know. I've heard of it. I've seen it. The thing what you're talking about is like the performance tune. They would basically go wide open on the dyno, and then they would advance and retard the timing, and then they would just get. They would raise it up till it detonated, and then they would lock it in.
Right.
And that was how you would get the most power you could get.
So, and then you got to run high test gas. You got to run the high octane.
Well, back then you could get 76 sold like leaded 95 octane.
What an insane childhood. So at some point, you had three or four of those wedge cars.
Yep.
Sitting
20, 40, 60, and 70. It was four of them.
Sitting over there off Olympic.
Yep.
On the west side. And then they went, eventually, where did they go? I mean, one maybe to the Smithsonian or Indy. Like, how did that work out?
The 67 Turbine went to Smithsonian. The 68 Car 20 went to Richard Petty. Car 40.
Richard Petty just later on just bought it?
He bought it for his own collection. And then Car 40 went to Allenser Sr., which is in the Allenser Museum in Albuquerque. Car 70 is at the Chicago Institute of Science.
Sure.
Okay. And then the other car is... the dude with the, I don't know his name, I forgot his name.
The guy selling it at a
Bear Jackson. The Corvette was selling it, he has that one.
As a pair. Very interesting stuff. And you drove those things up and down Olympic.
Reggie Jackson tried to buy it. He couldn't come up with it. And then so did Dick Clark originally, the first time we built the Corvette. Everybody wanted the Corvette. So you wonder why the Vet has value. It's probably because it was a Granatelli turbine.
Right.
Because there was another guy that was putting turbine engines, Transams and Camaros, and it never made it.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Well, that's exactly why it's not worth anything.
Yeah, that's why it's not worth anything. The promotion, the Granatelli name. Yeah. So now, what do you guys? Let's talk about the present. What Granatelli Motorsport? Cop online there. Show me the site, Max Pata. I'd like to check that out. Brag about your company a little bit.
So Granatelli Motorsports, essentially, I sold Paxson in 1998, and I needed something to do. So I created Granatelli Motorsports. The original idea was to really restore the Indy cars and kind of trade on the Granatelli name. But that turned into what's called mass airflow sensors.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody told me I could not make it selling mass airflow sensors. And I knew then the more people told me you couldn't do it, the more I would do it. And that's essentially what took Granatelli to the next level.
You don't tell a Granatelli he can't.
No.
Correct.
You can't drive a turbine car down Bundy.
You don't tell a Corolla he can. That's the difference.
That's so the difference.
Over the years, we've become strong in the automotive electronic portion. So we make mass airflow sensors and we make ignition coils. And again, I never thought I'd be in the ignition coil business going up against the big guys like Excel or MSD. But we found a niche and it turned into a great business. And today, I would say that the automotive electronics portion is probably 70% of the business. And then we're 30% high-end cars. We still build Corvettes, Camaros, you know, what American
muscle
cars.
And you have a dyno shop over there as well.
We have probably the most state-of-the-art all-wheel drive dyno, bar none.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be all-wheel drive. You're Granatelli. Yeah. I want a turbine in my Prius. That would get us some press. Get
Max Leonardo has a Prius.
Get DiCaprio. We're
halfway there.
DiCaprio would be all pissed off. I'm going to tease my last question for you.
Okay.
And then you tell me. And Matt, you weigh in as well.
All right.
Here we are, 2017, and, you know, you have turbocharging and you have supercharging. Yep. And in most things, you have VHS, you have beta, or you have LaserDisc and a DVD or whatever it is. But one wins out. It's just better. It's just better technology. Here we are in 2017. This stuff's been around 50 years now. I mean, more, but, you know, aircraft, World War II, Mustangs, blah, blah, blah. But let's just say 50 years of residential use, you know, non-industrial applications, and it's 2017. It's a tie. It's still a tie. Like, yep. Lots of BMWs and modern cars are trying to make their cafe rain this year, but there's still plenty of turbocharging, still plenty of supercharging, stuff like that. You just think, like, if you would have got hold of me in 1975, I'd go, it's all going to be turbo. They're going to get away from the belt and the drag and the crank and the blah blah blah. It's 2017, and tell me. We'll tease it, but do you think it's a tie like I do? Or I'd say maybe a little nod to turbo, but not much. I think it'd be...
Follow-up question would be in the aftermarket versus the...
Just kind of overall.
You know, the OE.
Just overall.
All right.
And Geico. Love me some Geico, man. How about save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? Why wouldn't you do this, man? Just go to geico.com. Spend a couple of minutes. Spend about 15 minutes. Save 15%. Or more on your car insurance. Who would not do this? I don't care what side of Ventura Boulevard you live on. This is a good idea. Go to geico.com. Spend a couple of minutes. Save a couple of ducats. Why not?
Yeah.
At geico.com. All right. What do you think, JR?
Okay, so here's your definitive answer. Turbochargers were prominent in the late 70s. You think about, like, Burt Reynolds when he got rid of the 6.6 turbo, Trans Am, then he went to a 5-liter turbo.
Right.
Turbos were becoming prominent. It's, as you said, belts are tough on production. The problem was that in the early 80s, the turbochargers were killing the catalytic converters, so everybody went back to superchargers.
There's now an answer.
Now the technology has come back again where the catalytic converters are far more efficient, so now that's why you see turbos coming.
You're saying the heat.
The heat would
kill. The heat from the turbo was killing the cats.
Remember, I don't care if you own a Kia or you own the Lamborghini. The catalytic converter must come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. It doesn't make a difference what the factory tells you. The EPA CAFE says it's got to have a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty.
What got better, catalytic converters or turbos?
Are you guys listening? This is what's called an answer. My entire life, I just go, I don't know about that. I just said the dumbest. I have people give me the dumbest answers on the planet, and this is what's called an answer.
Yeah, it was weird.
And it's shocking. Mark the calendar. Yeah. Mark the date.
Thank God we're recording this.
Also, you don't have to know anything to know when you're hearing an answer. This is what I'm trying to say. This is called an answer. Yeah. I get few answers to my questions.
So the punchline is that the smaller the engine, the more inclined you are to having a supercharger. Because a little engine, like a 2-liter engine, it needs a supercharger to have that instant boost.
I would think it would be just the opposite.
Oh my God, I said it backwards. You're right. I totally goofed on that. So that's the reason why, you're 100% right. That's the reason why the bigger engines are supercharged, like a GT500 or like a new supercharged Jaguar.
The Jaguar's all 5 liters.
Right. But you look at like the 2-liter Audis,
Ford Fiesta or whatever.
Right, they're all turbos.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why.
So how are we breaking it out? 2017, what's the split? Turbo, supercharger? Who wins the battle, the most popular?
Turbo.
Turbo.
Turbo's most popular.
But every BMW is now turbo. Every Mercedes now. Even a
Porsches.
If you buy a brand new Porsche non-turbo, it's turbo.
It's turbo. Yeah. There's a 911 with a turbo, then there's a 911 turbo. Right. Yeah.
What the heck?
There's still a lot of superchargers. But see, in the aftermarket world, there's still a lot of superchargers because they're easier to package and sell.
100%.
You know, it's like installing a turbocharger kit on your 370Z is still complicated, and that's why somebody like Steve Millen does like a supercharger kit, right? Like it's still so much easier to install.
No question.
Good answers. You can go to Granatelli Motorsports and check out all the cool aftermarket stuff, and just go to the website, Granatelli. It's pretty much spelled phonetically. Two A's and a telly over there. Motorsports.com and find out what's going on. You can shoot JR a tweet at Granatelli MS. Are we missing anything, JR?
No, you sound great. I appreciate you guys.
Check out his shop. He got a sweet dyno.
Super informative stuff, man. There's nothing like a guy who knows his business.
Somebody
man.
With answers.
Somebody with answers. I love that. All right, No Safe Spaces. Me and Dennis Prager. You can go check that out, nosafespace.com. Want to support the show? Go to carcastshow.com. Click on our Amazon banner. If you're going to buy that Granatelli sensor or the coil, for lack of a better term, bookmark us and go that way. And Shift and Steer, that's Matt's podcast as well. Corolla Drinks, check that out. Live events, go to adamcorolla.com. Until next time. Adam Carolla for JR Granatelli and Matt the Moderator DeAndrea saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Carcast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on carcastshow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
Trial, an inside look at how the criminal justice system works and sometimes doesn't. Written by Mark Garagus and Pat Harris and narrated by Mike Dawson.
Another thing about the Scott Peterson case that has always puzzled us is the widespread, almost unanimous opinion that Scott was guilty before one piece of evidence was introduced. If you examine every high-profile case of the past two decades, OJ, Michael Jackson, Casey Anthony, Robert Blake, the Duke lacrosse team, Dr. Conrad Murray, you'll see that every one of the defendants had some group or constituency that argued on behalf of their innocence. But Scott Peterson didn't. When we took over the case, we soon found out that it was considered an accepted fact that he was guilty.
Mistrial. Available now at iTunes, Audible, and adamcarolla.com.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.